Welcome back to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. Admit it, this has happened to you. You're involved in something and realize you need a specific item from another room. But by the time you walk over there to get it, you've completely forgotten what it is you were after. When we blank out in situations like this, we often blame it on our aging brain. But it doesn't have to be this way.
Forgetfulness doesn't have to be a symptom of encroaching old age. In fact, advances in science are enabling us to reclaim lost ground and even prevent loss of memory and function. Here to discuss the latest in cognitive brain training is Dr. Sherry Willis, adjunct research professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Washington in Seattle. Welcome, Dr. Willis. Thanks for joining us on Take Care.
Thank you. Hello.
Describe your work, if you will, in studying and improving cognitive decline in older adults.
Our work began back in the 1980s, actually. I co-direct a study with Kay Warner Shia, a Seattle longitudinal study, in which he has followed adults for a number of years and looked at their changes in cognitive functioning. And we decided to capitalize on the longitudinal data that we had on these subjects and see if we could train people who were stable and had not declined compared to people who had declined on a specific ability. And I have to tell you a little bit about how changes occur in cognitive functioning with age. First of all, there are a number of different abilities. We sometimes think that all abilities involve memory, but there are distinct abilities such as reasoning ability, memory ability, mathematical ability, verbal ability, spatial orientation, which you use when you drive. And although there are some general patterns of when these abilities begin to decline, usually in the mid-60s, except for verbal ability, which really doesn't decline until the mid-70s, there's wide individual differences. So some people really won't decline on, say, reasoning or memory ability until they're 70, while other people might start declining in their 40s or 50s, although that would be an indicator that possibly of a preclinical pathology.
Is there any relationship between the type of work a person engages in and their abilities or lack of decline over time?
There's a modest relationship. We've looked at, since we're in Seattle, we've looked at engineers who work for Boeing, and we see that as long as they're in the workforce, they seem to have very good spatial orientation ability, for example, being able to rotate things in space and determine the orientation, whether they've turned them left or right or flipped them over, this kind of thing. However, we have seen that as these engineers retire, they also seem to not get the mental stimulation that their job afforded unless they do woodworking or something else in their leisure time. And so we do see a decline there. But yes, now, you know, it's a chicken and egg question. Maybe people who have high spatial ability are more likely to go into engineering or drafting or dentistry. Dentistry involves a lot of spatial orientation. And so it's a little hard to say whether or not it's a combination of people who have special abilities in these fields go into them, but obviously the experiences and the challenges that they have in their work do contribute to their maintaining these abilities.
When you began your studies in the 1980s, what was the age group that you were working with?
Well, we chose people 65 and older because, as I mentioned, this is the average age, and I do want to stress average age, that people begin to show some modest decline in what we call fluid abilities. These are abilities such as that involve reasoning or speed. So fluid abilities might be memory or speed with which you can process a task or reasoning ability, in contrast to other abilities such as verbal that you acquire through your culture and through schooling, which seem to stay stable a longer period of time.
So is there a way to intervene and kind of stave off what up until now might have been thought as a very age-appropriate cognitive decline. And how would you do that?
Yes. So I do want to stress that all of our work has been with normal, healthy adults. We have not done research with Alzheimer's patients or with people that have been diagnosed as mild cognitive impairment, which some people think is a pre-stage to dementia, although not all mild cognitive impairment patients go on to dement. But we were dealing with healthy, normal individuals. Now, that's not to say that they didn't have things like hypertension or arthritis, but they're cognitively normal. And as I said, because we have the prior longitudinal data in our first research, we characterized the people as whether or not they had declined on a specific ability, such as reasoning or not, or memory, and then randomly assigned them to training either on the ability on which they had declined, on ability in which they had not shown decline. And we found training improvement both for people who had declined and for people who had not declined. But, of course, the interpretation of those findings is very different. For the people who had declined, we were remediating prior losses, whereas for people who had not declined, the training was building a new skill level on that ability.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And our guest today is Dr. Sherry Willis. She's done years of research on cognitive brain decline in older people. And we're talking right now about some very promising results in the ability of researchers at this point to intervene and make some improvements in people, and these are well-functioning older adults, and make some improvements in different areas. And you're talking about not just memory, but in processing things, spatial relationships, etc. So tell us more about what you found in your results after working with these people.
Well, we followed these people for up to 5 years after the training, and many of them maintained their ability compared to people who had not been trained. But this study that I just described to you was done in Seattle, Washington, and so it was a very well-educated, very ethnically homogeneous group of people. And so although it sounded promising, there was concern about would this kind of training generalize to a broader group of people, African Americans, people who had a lower level of education. And so in the 1990s, the National Institute on Aging funded a large, probably the largest clinical trial of normal adults, older adults, for a cognitive intervention. And we did training with over about 2,400 people in six different geographical locations. We oversampled African Americans, again, with people beginning in their mid-60s but going through their 70s and 80s were recruited. Again, these were cognitively normal people, but some of them were very poorly educated, and so they were functioning very low, even though they were not demented. And we administered three kinds of training, memory, reasoning, and speed of processing, to these individuals. They got 10 one-hour training sessions. We followed them for a year, and then a random subset of them were given a booster session. And we now have a 10-year follow-up of these people, 10 years after their original training. And we're still seeing training effects for the reasoning and speed of processing measures.
As you mentioned, it was a very specific population that you dealt with, and you did wonder if it could, you know, be brought to the larger population. For those who are listening to this interview, we have about a minute left. What advice would you have for the rest of us with aging brains who aren't able to take advantage of your study? Are there things that we can be doing to keep our brains sharp, like crossword puzzles or learning new skills?
I would suggest staying mentally active, but in a variety of activities. I like to draw the analogy to physical exercise. In physical exercise, there's aerobic training, there's flexibility training, and there's strength training. And so it's the same principle applies in cognitive training, in that there are different abilities, and so you need to cross-trained, so to speak. So verbal ability might be great for crossword puzzles, but spatial orientation might be better trained by some kind of handcraft. The main thing is to keep at it. You can get a boost in training, but it will dissipate. It's not a vaccine. So choose a variety of activities and be persistent. Stay with it.
Dr. Sherry Willis, adjunct research professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Washington in Seattle. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
For more information on cognitive brain training and Dr. Willis, visit the Take Care webpage at WRVO.org.
Coming up on next week's show, some women with a family history of breast cancer are choosing elective mastectomies even without cancer present. This surgery is on the rise and controversial even within the medical community. We talked to one of the world's top breast cancer experts about this difficult decision. Plus, if you're leaving town this holiday season, you'll want tips on staying healthy while traveling. A travel expert shares her favorites.
Thanks for spending this half hour with us. If you've got a comment or question, email us at takecare@wrvo.org. This episode of Take Care is also available as a podcast on iTunes and at wrvo.org/takecare. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And until next time, take care.
The information presented on Take Care is offered for educational and informational purposes only and should not be construed as personal medical advice. You should consult with your personal physician or caregiver regarding your own medical care. Take Care is a production of WRVO Public Media, written and produced by Lorraine Rapp and Linda Lowen, edited and engineered by Leah Landry. Catherine Loper is executive producer. Support for Take Care comes from the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York.